Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Welcome to the podcast. Today is another in the replay series in which we revisit older episodes for the benefit of people who are new to the podcast, and also to refresh the memories of people who've listened to these episodes before. They're the best episodes that I replay, and I really think the guests that are on them are fantastic. This one is featuring Mike Bell, who was in episode 7 in 2022, a long time ago now. He's from the Family Court Reform Coalition, and he has some fantastic points to make. And also their website is well worth checking out, fcrc.org. So without further ado, here is Mike Bell of the Family Court Reform Coalition. Welcome to this episode of the Fair Parenting Podcast. On this episode, we're joined by Mike Bell of Equilaw, and he runs the Family Court Reform Coalition. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, nice to hear you.
Okay, good to speak to you. We're going to talk mainly this episode about your work with the Family Court Reform Coalition. Could you tell us how you started it, when you started it, and just the initial steps that you took?
We noticed that Dominic Rubb, who was Justice Minister at the time, last December, called for some radical ideas on reform of the family court because the statistics from the government perspective were getting ridiculous. I mean, the delays were getting long and the cost was getting high. So I don't have much experience myself with the family court, and I thought that was probably a benefit. But I looked around and I couldn't find, although you can find lots and lots of people grumbling about the family court, I couldn't find what you might call a straightforward set of proposals or what have you. And so I thought it'd be a good idea to just try to pull that together. So the very first thing I did was simply contact one guy I knew who had much more experience at the family court through Families Need Fathers. And I said, let's just make a list of what the problems are and what have you. So we did that. And then I just asked other people who I knew had been through the family court, people I knew through Gender Parity, which is our little think tank, which we meet up once a week to discuss different issues. And one of the things I noticed is that people weren't telling me what the problem was. They were telling me what the solution was. And yes, from some previous work that I have done on a completely different field, I know that the analysis, when somebody tells you a solution, hidden inside the solution is both the problem and their analysis of what's caused the problem. You put those two things together and they come up with the solution. So initially, it was a process of extracting those three sections. Does that follow?
So yes, it does. Yeah.
Then we can make a list of the problems, and then we can have a section on analysis explaining how the problem has arisen. You know, is it due to stupidity? Is it bad law? Is it bad application? You could have different theories. So we produced our first draft quite quickly. So sort of January, mid-February, we had produced something or other in the same form as the final version, which people can read, that is in those three main sections, but we also put in a section which was learning from other countries. So are there other places that do it better?
Yes.
And also what's been tried that hasn't worked. So for instance, making a mediation assessment doesn't seem to work because people just choose not to do it, one party or the other.
Yes. No. Yes. That only happened in one case.
Yes. So that was like February. So we ran a little seminar. I can't quite remember how many people, maybe 10 other people joining us who had read the report. And then we recorded that and pulled out all the points. By making the seminar quite short, it was possible to make the transcript and then go through it step by step. So it's like a construction kit, really. Luckily, I don't know why, but my brain works like that. You know, I have to make lists and... whereas other people produce a long narrative.
Yes.
So then we tried to spend the time between March and June expanding the coalition. You know, sort of writing to people and saying, would you endorse our report? That turned out to be a little harder than we anticipated. But in June, we had another couple of seminars just to refine the report. So we produced a final version, I think, in July, created a website. And in September, we started an implementation group because one of the things that's obvious is that people have been campaigning for reform of the family court for God knows how long, certainly two decades, and it hasn't happened. So, you know, like, it's not that we don't know what the problem is, or at least or the potential solutions, but why hasn't it happened? So that's what we're grappling with at the moment.
So you came up with the report, or the initial version of the report, in January, and you mentioned the seminar that you put together. Did that involve you just reaching out to people in the field that you'd found online, and you just inviting them to be part of the coalition?
Basically, by then there was, you know, probably half a dozen people involved, and then other people we knew. So it's like sort of who should we ask, groups and individuals, and then just publicising it.
So what could you run us through some of the main proposals of your report? The whole report is online at your website for people to read, isn't it? And we'll give the link to that report in the show notes. But could you just give us an overview of the main proposals?
Yeah, there are five sections, one called support for families, second one called reducing incentives to go to court, third one promoting out-of-court settlement, the fourth one improving the court process, and the fifth one is about evidence base, because yes, one of the effects of having a secret family court is that nobody knows whether it's any good or not, because people don't do research. Journalists can't go to various courts and come out with an independent view, say, I've been to five courts and this, I saw this each time. So obviously the thing that we'd really like is for people not to go to court. I think in the analysis, what we're clear about is it's the process which is the problem. I know that listening to what other people have said, from their own experience, they think the people involved, CAFCAS or their ex's solicitor or the judge, are corrupt and awful and misandrist and all the rest of it. We don't think that analysis makes sense, because it just can't be the case that the system is wrong because every individual in it is individually wrong.
And yeah, so I'd agree with that.
And exactly the same. I mean, you can look on a website which is about family court reform, and before you know which country it's in, you just read the same stories. Everywhere, yeah, the story is the same in the whole of the Anglosphere. You know, India is particularly bad, or Australia is worse than us. And it must be the system, you know, that people have children and they're kind of together and then they drift apart, and most of them come to some sort of reasonably amicable agreement, which they stick to without going near a court. And then some people go, well, we don't seem to agree, so let's go and get some help. And what the system actually does is drive them apart and persuade, yes, them to demonize their partner. You know, one of the most extraordinary things is, I remember when my ex and I were separating in the mid-90s, we had recently seen that film Kramer versus Kramer.
Yes.
And we made a kind of, we didn't make a pact, but we kind of both had concluded that going near the family court was a really bad idea. I think that film is like 1989 or something like that.
I think it's much earlier than that. I think it may be early 80s.
Could well be. But the extraordinary thing is, I watched it just recently, and a lot of the film isn't about the family court. But when you get to the bit where the two parties are visiting their solicitors and going to the court, I'm thinking, nothing has changed.
Yes.
It's like, wow. So are there ways to keep families together? Are there ways to reduce the incentives to go to court? I mean, I think it's these incentives which are the real evil in the system, that if one party can make an allegation of domestic abuse, they get legal aid.
Yes.
And it's not just that they get legal aid. It's that the process pays people to push people apart.
Yes.
While at the same time claiming that they're acting in the best interest, protecting the children and more.
Yes. It's an excuse that works in every situation. We're putting the child first. We know it's painful for you. We know you're going through hell. And we know it's just another 6 months to the next hearing, but it's in the interest of the child. And it's one that you can't argue against, really. You see, well, as soon as somebody says it's in the interest of the child, you can't go anywhere with it.
Well, I mean, I know two cases where the father is deemed unsuitable to see his child unsupervised, so he's paying money to go to a contact centre. While at the same time, he's CRB checked to deal with vulnerable children as his job.
Yes.
And then you get the total absurdity that the actual biological father is deemed unsuitable to spend time alone, but the mother's new boyfriend can do it that weekend.
Yes.
I mean, it really is. If somebody had constructed this from scratch, you know, and it must all must be a mistake, you know, or just generated by these vested interests.
These cases that you just mentioned, they're happening across Britain and America and India and Australia and many other countries. It's the same thing. And there are commonalities that are wrong with the system in so many countries that if you just put them right, you know, there's simple things that it would affect and improve the system for millions. We're not talking about having to split the atom or cure cancer. You know, it's simple things we can do.
I agree. I mean, there's all sorts of really good evidence now. I mean, by some lucky chance, there's been this real experiment in Spain, you know, in order to do a proper scientific experiment on something which is not physics or chemistry, you have to have a large sample size.
Yes.
That is, there's no point in doing it with, say, 25 families. And you have to have a control group, that is a group which doesn't have the intervention. Well, that's morally, that's quite difficult to set up as an experiment, because you're saying, you know, you lot may have to experience harm for the duration of my experiment. But in Spain, they have a regional structure where regional governments have independence, relative independence, certainly in the field of family law. And so some regions of Spain have implemented 50-50 shared care and others haven't. Well, so that's the research set up perfectly. And the research is absolutely clear that starting with 50-50 shared care is significantly better for absolutely everybody except the lawyers.
This sounds similar to America, because I know that a number of states have now gone down the road of 50-50, presumption of 50-50 parenting. And it's interesting, I had heard a bit about Spain, but I haven't heard about the results of that. Have you got a link to any of the research, the outcomes? I could perhaps put in the show notes.
The other thing that we did, which I forgot to say, is that the report is fully referenced. It's all like ONS data and research papers and stuff like that. So you can find the link to the two research papers on the Spanish experience. The big advantage over the American experience is that we were just speaking to somebody the other day from Ohio who is part of that American group who are getting 50-50 shared care in a number of different states. They don't have any data yet, and it'll be difficult for them to do it because the only research they'll be able to do is of before and after, and it's very difficult to disentangle different effects, you know, like a recession or change of government or something like that. Whereas in Spain, these things were happening at the same time.
Yes. To go back to your report, one of the problems with a coalition is disagreement. You know, you're bringing together lots of people for the same cause, but people have different ideas. And you're looking to expand the coalition. How have you dealt with cases where people might agree with 90% of your report, but they disagree with 10% of it? How do you work and keep a coalition together? Because as we've seen in politics around the world, it can create problems.
Yeah, I mean, those who got involved in the process tended to go through the process and come to an agreement, if you know what I mean. But you're talking about how do we get new people in, and it is a significant problem. I think it's more of a problem for men than for women. I mean, I got into trouble recently for putting up a tweet that says, women say, we agree on 90%, so let's work together. Yes. Men say, we disagree on 10%, so I can't work with you.
Yes.
So what we've done is, initially we asked people to endorse the document. Now, people with a lot of experience of this sort of thing, for instance, Anne Widdecombe says, I don't agree with everything, but I'm happy to endorse. Whereas people with less experience, maybe they've got had their own family court experience and they're absolutely convinced of X and Y, will say, well, I disagree with line 3 on page 17 and therefore I can't join.
Yes.
Which is okay, except that will get us nowhere. So what we've done recently is just produce 7 principles. So now what we're going to do is ask people to sign up for these 7 principles and see where we go from there. I mean, interestingly, this is just my own hunch, it's going to be easier to deal with the government than to deal with men's issues activists.
Mm-hmm. That's
why, because Sir Andrew McFarlane, who is head of the family division, has written some stuff on the reform of the family court, and he actually did a interview for Radio 4 just recently, and a lot of what he's proposing is in our report, not because it was... We didn't know about that until afterwards. So everybody's saying the same thing. And we sent him our report and said, what do you think? Do you send it to the government? And a couple of weeks later, we got a nice reply from his office saying, Sir Andrew has read your report and asked permission to forward it to the Minister of Justice. So he's not saying, I agree with your report, but he certainly thought it was good enough to forward to the Minister of Justice. And, and one of our team did the same thing with his quite senior MP, who similarly said, I will forward it to the Minister of Justice. Of course, we've sent it to the Minister of Justice and the just members of the Justice Select Committee and lots of other people that have been recommended to us.
I gave my ideas in episode 2 of this podcast, but as we've discussed offline, they're quite similar to your proposal. So I will be asking my MP to forward a copy of your report to the Justice Minister as well. And I think this is something we can all do, is engage with our MPs. They may not be aware of how much this affects their constituents, the problems in the family court, but it's only by engaging with them that we will raise awareness and perhaps get something done. I mean, it's very difficult when you're in the trenches of the family court, and sometimes you're just trying to get through each day, and the thought of change in the future is not something that we can all focus on. But either when a family court process ends for us, or when perhaps on the days we're feeling a bit stronger, if we can engage with our MPs and try and get perhaps our ideas sent to the Justice Minister or your report, you know, that's going to raise awareness, and that can only be a positive thing for change.
I think that's right. One of the things that I hear quite regularly is, you know, this kind of accusation of evil against the MPs, you know, that because they voted this particular way in such and such a bill, that they are complicit. But of course, they're largely ignorant. Luckily for me, I was the environmental campaigner with the Lib Dems in the late 80s, early 90s. And people used to say the same thing, you know, that the MPs were corrupt. They were out to destroy the planet and no interest in sustainable conservation. And what I found was that they're just completely ignorant and hadn't even thought about it. And you know, we know that because the family court is secret, practically nobody knows about it. I'm the secretary of an all-party group on issues affecting men and boys, and a very good chair, Nick Fletcher. You know, we just produced our first report last year, which is called A Boy Today. You know, it's like, what is it like for a boy today growing up in the UK? And so on page 1, we've just got a list of disadvantages, education and suicide and all this type of thing. And, you know, he said, once you see it written down like that, it is astonishing. And the answer is, what is it? He had never seen it written down like that.
Yes.
We're educating people on something that they didn't know about, in the same way that we've had to educate people on stuff that they didn't know about the environment, you know. And
yes, if we go back 30 years with the environment, it's perhaps similar, isn't it? It's raising awareness.
And it takes a long time. And what doesn't really work is demonizing people.
Yeah.
You just sit down quietly and say, look, there is a problem of acid rain. I mean, the problem was solved, you see, of acid rain. But yes, at a certain point, most politicians were not aware what acid rain was. And the solution turns out to be relatively simple and actually not very costly.
Yes. Well, and the ozone layer as well.
Yes, exactly.
So who else have you sent it to? I think, if I remember rightly, you sent it to the new Home Secretary, Suella Braverman.
Yes, yes. Suella Braverman had actually done, it wasn't a private member's bill, I think it was the 10-minute rule bill in 2017, 18, something like that. It was quite good, but, you know, like everybody just wants the same thing. It just hasn't been done yet.
I came across that bill only last week. In 2017, I wasn't a parent, so probably that's the reason it passed me by. But I only read about it last week, and I read the bill, and it's just fantastic common sense. And full credit for her to raise that issue and the bill. Obviously, 5 years have passed. It would be nice to think she'd give it another try at some stage. But if you've sent her that report, that should hopefully help.
She's not going to answer now because she's Home Secretary. And, you know, you can't expect somebody who's got a new ministerial job to write and say, yes, I agree with your report. But what she may do is raise it in Cabinet.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I found with environmental campaigning and with this is you never know what's going to happen. You can't have a plan. You should just plod on and follow any path that appears to have a positive, you know, when you see something positive happening, pounce on that, because you just don't know when something positive is going to happen.
Yes, I agree. And that's true in many fields in life, isn't it? You've just got to put yourself out there and network and keep pushing your point, and hopefully at some stage somebody will pick it up or do something. Yeah. Well, as you say, somebody out there will have a conversation with somebody else who's in a position to do something, and there's just no way of knowing when or who that might be. And I think your idea of a coalition is really powerful, because I think what a lot of us are doing is we're in our own silos working away and trying, you know, we're hosting and writing and doing podcasts, and I've seen some people writing songs and books, and it is all fantastic. It's raising awareness, and we've got a Parental Alienation Day on the 25th of April now, and this is all really, really good. But bringing people together to work together is a step on from that, and I think it's a really powerful thing. What can people do to help if they want to get involved with the coalition?
I think that probably what we can't do is accommodate a whole lot of people. Do you know what I mean? In order to have a team, it's got to be quite small. So we would get, if people want to be closely involved in this implementation process and have those skills, then we'd love to hear from them. What we're going to do is, at the moment on the website, it only gives you the opportunity to endorse the document. I think we're probably going to leave that there, but also create something simpler, which is basically signing up with your agreement to these seven principles. So it'd be great if people could do that. So the coalition doesn't have to be in the form of everybody's, you know, coming to the conference, if you know what I mean. It can be just, we endorse the principles, we share the report. You know, if we got input into the process, obviously, maybe sometime in the new year, we might have another version if people point out errors or additions. If people generally agree that there's something missing or something which needs amendment, then we would do that. So it's like trying to create a coalition about a general set of principles plus a report which gives you some more details and some references. But more importantly, that isn't written as a polemic.
Yes. And Is there a logo that people can perhaps post on their social media to show their support?
Yes. So the logo, which is, you know, on the Twitter account and on the website, you sort of got a picture of our family in a justice balance, if you know what I mean. What we propose is that people who want to support the process sort of add that to their website. Do you know what I mean? For instance, so some people who run a group called Positive Conclusions, they've just sort of added that logo to their logo on their Twitter feed and what have you. So we invite people
right.
to that. As long as you're actually proposing something more or less in line with ours, and it's not like we have an application process, but we wouldn't like you to use it if your views were considerably different or if you're very angry and accusatory.
Yes. So, but people can share the report with their MPs.
Oh, yes, please. And, yeah, yeah.
And ask them to send it to the Justice Minister and post links to the report on social media to just basically spread awareness. Is that all okay if they do that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the main problems is people don't do things. And when they do things, they often do suboptimal things. Like if you're writing to your MP, no more than one side of A4.
Yes.
And in the first paragraph, say what you want. Say, could you read this report? Do you agree with the conclusions? Will you send it to the Justice Minister? And then I am, you know, Fred Bloggs, your constituent. Because you have to say, put your name and address. Otherwise, there's no reason why an MP needs to reply to anybody who is not a constituent. Being practical. Say something a little bit personal, but I would definitely steer away from saying, you know, corrupt system, you know, all that sort of language, because I think you should think about it more like an advertising campaign. You know, if you were trying to sell a new brand of chocolate bar and you put up the advert once and people didn't buy your chocolate bar, if you concluded that the whole system was corrupt and was a conspiracy to stop your chocolate bar being sold, you'd be wrong. You have to keep on advertising your chocolate bar and,
yes.
And show the benefits of it.
Yes.
Because if somebody phones you up and starts ranting at you, you immediately go on the defensive. That's what happens to MPs and everybody else.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. How optimistic are you that we can get some change into the system?
Well, I would say pretty optimistic, because this is just me speaking. I think it's all a ghastly mistake rather than a conspiracy, if you know what I mean. Obviously, there are the vested interests, but
yes.
You know, if Sir Andrew McFarland is largely in favour, and there's another judge, Wildblood, I think, from Bristol, people are roughly saying the same thing. Although the really important issue is the moral welfare of the child, government are primarily interested in saving money. The situation is dire in the government's finances at the moment, and we may well be able to persuade them that some simple reforms like 50-50 shared care might reduce the number of cases going to court by 30% or something like that. And they might just implement it just to try and save some money. So I think that the argument is won in so much as there doesn't seem to be a counter argument.
Yes.
And I would say that the main reasons that nothing has transpired is partly luck, or bad luck. That is, there's been nobody in the cabinet with this on their mind. And partly because the men's issues movement is largely ignorant of the skills needed to get something implemented.
Yes.
Now, our group are fully aware that we don't have the skills to do this. However, that's the next step. And I think that this is the difference. A lot of people have got to the point of writing a report or creating a website, or do you know what I mean?
No.
But they haven't gone to the next step of saying, so how do we get this implemented? And I think it's going to be quite interesting. Watch this space.
Well, that sounds positive, and I think you've assessed things really well, where we are, why things are as they are, and what we need to do to change it. And it's really encouraging that you're mentioning judges who are of similar opinion. I think your views of how to bring about change and also the starting point that you present your views in is totally correct. You know, you use the analogy with the chocolate bar, and I think that you're trying to persuade people
And as we know with advertising today, you know, social media, we're bombarded from the moment we wake up with calls to action, and we're overwhelmed. And I'm sure that's true of politicians and change makers. We need to raise awareness and engage with them. And it's just that there's competing causes that are perhaps better at grabbing their time and attention.
Yeah, so I think if we stick with the chocolate bar analogy, if lots of people are trying to sell very slightly different chocolate bars, you know, yes, the advertising is not going to work so well. So even though you might not entirely agree with everything in the report, it might be better to try and sell our chocolate bar, which at least has got, you know, momentum, yes, behind it. By building a coalition, I mean, one of my advantages, I didn't really know anything at the beginning of January. And so I've just had to take lots and lots of advice on how to build this. And I'll ask, you know, get people to draft things. So it's constructed from a number of different people's opinion and checked by all sorts of other people. So I think it's a reasonable chocolate bar to try and help sell.
Yes. And it's not, to use, carry on with that analogy, it's not the only chocolate bar you're ever going to eat. You know, once we get some change, then you can come forward with other proposals to, you know, a system is never perfect. And we're looking to change things for millions of people initially. And then you can always tweak things later, you know, and that's just a natural part of any law.
Yes, exactly. So at the moment, the main problem is that hardly any MPs know what the problem is and haven't given it any thought. If we can at least get them thinking about it and they take the first step, even if it's not exactly the step that we want, we might get a bit. But then they'll have thought about it, and maybe later on it can be tweaked, but it's not going to be easy.
No, I mean, a lot of societal change isn't easy. I mean, there are causes that just, you mentioned the environment earlier, but whether it's disabled rights or LGBTQ rights, a lot of these are self-evident in that they should be there, but they've still taken, in some cases, decades to achieve. When anyone could see at the time that a lot of, for example, the environment, yeah, of course we need to solve the problem with the ozone hole in the ozone layer, but it took a long time of awareness building. And example, you know, we're talking about another case here. What would be the objection to 50-50 shared care, for example? You made the point earlier that there isn't really a credible objection you can have because evidence points that it is better for the child. So the case is already made, but as with so many of these causes, something that should be just evident and implemented straight away still has to fight against inertia and competing causes to get traction. And I think once something does get traction and awareness, change, I mean, we've seen with how, you know, sweeping changes were brought in during COVID, you know, the government is capable of great changes very quickly, but it needs to get, you know, over its initial inertia and, you know, get the ball rolling. I think then things will change.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't make any promises, but I'm pretty optimistic. It's a good chocolate bar. So,
well, yeah, but I think so. I read your report and I'm really encouraged by the proposals and the fact that there are people coming together, and that people are in senior positions are, you know, in favour of some of this. I talked to my MP and he's fully aware of the situation. And, you know, I think getting something like your report, not just to the Justice Minister once, but if he gets it coming to him several times, then it can only be a good thing to aid change. And I think your report is a really positive step. So I would hope that people can go away and have a read of it and see if they want to get involved and engage with people who can bring about change. So where best can people find the report and read about the work that you're doing? Are you on social media, or have you got what's your website?
The website address is incredibly simple. It's FCRC, which stands for Family Court Reform Coalition. So it's fcrc.uk, and there you'll find a copy of the report and some other things. And it'll be the place to watch. We also have the Twitter account at fcrcuk. It's just started just in the last few weeks, so it's still quite small. And we'll be developing things from there. We have a colleague who's using his TikTok account to publicise some videos and using the FCRC logo when it's appropriate.
Yes, that's fantastic. It's good to hear about TikTok because it's not something I'm fully aware of. Well, I've never been on TikTok, but it seems to be where a lot of the social media action is happening these days. So I think if somebody is building awareness there, that could be really powerful. Thanks very much, Mike, and good luck with the coalition. I'm definitely on board with it, and I've signed the endorsement form recently. I wish you luck with this and the change that's so badly needed in the country. Best wishes with it, and keep us informed, please, and we can all keep up with your work also on social media. So thanks very much for talking to us today.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.